I'm James Atkinson, and this is Drinks Adventures, the podcast where I speak to some of the world's most exciting producers of beer, wine, and spirits and explore trends and issues in the drinks industry today. Thanks for joining me again on Drinks Adventures. And for those of you listening in real time, apologies for the radio silence over the last few weeks. If you follow me on Instagram, you may have seen that I was recently in Portland, Oregon, on a media trip with Westwood Whiskey, which I'll cover in a future episode of the podcast. But that's actually only part of the reason for the delay. I completed another episode a fortnight ago that's been held up by an unexpected media embargo that is beyond my control. I'll release that season finale episode just as soon as I can. And in the meantime, I'm excited to share an interview I recorded with Tim Duckett, founder of Heartwood Malt Whiskey, an independent bottler based in Tasmania that has developed something of a cult following amongst whiskey drinkers. Tim and I discuss Heartwood's journey to date and the role that independent bottlers play in the whiskey industry more generally. And as someone who has been closely involved with Australian whiskey since the early years, Tim has some interesting views to share on its recent trajectory and future prospects. You can hear the interview with Tim right after this message from one of our valued sponsors. Tim Duckett, thanks so much for joining me on the Drinks Adventures podcast.
Absolute pleasure, Joe.
You're an independent bottler. Now, a lot of people wouldn't really know what that is. Maybe you can talk about the role of an independent bottler in the whiskey industry.
Historically, throughout Scotland, you would find whiskey supplied by independent bottlers. Independent bottlers are those people that are not a distillery, but they purchase mature or maturing whiskey from distilleries and release it under their own label. The difference between my company and those companies is that we actually source the new make spirit from distilleries in Australia and New Zealand and put it into barrels we choose, and then we do the maturation.
So it would normally already have been through some maturation and maybe finished in casks by the independent bottlers in Scotland?
Not necessarily. It can be just a cask purchased from a distiller and then put into storage in the independent bottlers' warehouse, and they would mature it further before it was released, and they, as I say, they would release it under their own name, though they would refer back to the distillery of origin if the distillery wanted them to do that. Some distilleries do not want their whiskey mentioned on an independent bottler's label, but that's okay. That's just part of the industry.
So in that case, they would just have to say, you know, it's an Isla distillery or something along those lines.
That's right. Yep.
So how long have you been doing it, and what made you decide to do that as opposed to starting a distillery?
I'm an environmental consultant that works in construction and mining and doing habitat restoration and mine closure. That's my area of expertise. I was appointed to the Ben Lomond Ski Field Advisory Committee in Tasmania to look after the environmental issues on the ski field. On that committee was Bill Lark and Lynn Lark, because Bill and Lynn had a share in the hotel on the mountain. They said they were going to make whiskey, and I said to them, I'm going to drink it. And that's how our relationship started. And when barrels first became commercially available in 1999, I bought my first barrel. So I started buying barrels from that time, and I did not bottle until 2012. Fortunately, my other business supported my bad habits and allowed me to purchase, in the good years, allowed me to purchase barrels to put aside in storage.
So how many have you got in your warehouse now?
We run two companies. So we run Heartwood Malt Whiskey, which has been established since 2012, and Tasmanian Independent Bottlers, which was established in 2015. And so we would have under our control 20,000 litres. Between Heartwood and TIB, we buy from 14 distilleries in Australia and New Zealand. And we have 20 different new make styles, and that does not include apple brandy or rum or oat whiskey or rye whiskey. And we have 14 different barrel types as well, and they're sourced from all over the world, and we use 6 different cooperages.
And are you blending these different whiskies from different distilleries, or are they all single malt releases?
We have blended. We have produced vatted malts, more so in Hartwood than TIB. TIB, as I said, it's only been around a little while. And I should probably talk about the difference between Hartwood and TIB. Hartwood is always at cask strength, and it's usually matured in 200, 240 and 300 litre barrels and has significant age for Tasmanian conditions. Where TIB, they're matured in 100 litre barrels and released at a younger age. Not every barrel is going to be good. So fortunately, with a large variety of different spirit types that we have, we can blend, and we have blended, and we will be blending more in the future. And so we produced a whiskey called The Craft from TIB, and that was a vatting or a blending of whiskey from two mainland distilleries. With Hartwood, we've always produced two blends, if you like. One is called The Dregs, as you can imagine, The Dregs is The Dregs, and we have a good time with that. And the other one is called The Beagle, and The Beagle was named after Charles Darwin and his boat and his voyage of discovery in the evolution of whiskey, and he came to Hobart. The Beagles can have any number of different distillery releases in it. And our last one, the Beagle 6, came from 8 different barrels and 4 different distilleries.
And you were talking about how some of the distilleries in Scotland don't want their name to be on the label. What's been the sort of general approach of the distilleries in Australia?
Most are very, very happy to have their name associated with us because we've done quite well on the world stage, particularly this year with TIB and Hartwood. And so some of the distilleries have sought us out to take on their new make and release it under the Hartwood or TIB label. But there are a couple on the mainland that do not want their name mentioned. That's okay. We have no problem with that. And that's not dissimilar to what is in Scotland too.
So you mentioned that everything under the Hartwood label is cask strength. Other than that, is there any sort of what you could call a house style?
No. I think distilleries base a lot of their production on having a house style. And it's not just in Australia. It's also in Scotland and Ireland and Europe. The beauty, I think, of being an independent bottler, we can make anything we like. And so a house style is probably only based on my palate. So I like a long, persistent, thick whiskey, and that's what we try and achieve, something that lingers but has great length. There's nothing worse than taking whiskey and it disappears in the first third of your mouth and is gone. Maybe that is the house style, is the actual texture of the whiskey that we produce, and that's very important to us.
And are you getting the new make made to your specifications?
No. I still like the new make to come from the distillery and be a distillery style. However, I will get a sample of new make sent to me and I will match it to a barrel. So if it is a lighter style and I want to increase the persistence or the texture or the mouth feel, I would put it into a fortified with a lot of sugar, and so I specifically match new make to barrels. And some new makes, you can put them in any barrel and they will be absolutely fine, but others may be a little bit short or a little bit astringent up the front or something like that, and you can actually match it to a barrel to produce a better whiskey later on.
Now, you seem to, from what I've seen online, developed a bit of a cult following. How has that happened?
I mean, whiskey is made to drink, but I also find producing whiskey quite entertaining. So not only do we produce a whiskey that is quite unique, because under the conditions that we have in Tasmania, the alcohol concentration goes up with time, where in Scotland the alcohol concentration goes down. And so we have produced whiskies that vary around 60% up to 73.5%, and that's naturally how it comes out of the cask when it's finished maturing. That in itself is quite unique in the world, and so that has attracted a lot of people. Plus, our technique of decanting and maturing our whiskey and using temperatures between 20 and 30 degrees to drive off the volatile front end. And the term we use is syrup up, and that came from Chris Thompson, the head distiller at Lark Distillery. And so that gives us a more syrupy texture. Plus, we have good fun with the names and we don't take ourselves too seriously. And I think people enjoy that as well. And the whiskies that we produce, we're not trying to produce a house style, as I said, and we're producing whiskies that are different all the time and yet maintaining the same quality.
You've pretty much been around since the early days of the modern whiskey movement, if you want to call it that. What are the changes that you've seen in Tasmania in that time?
It's not just in Tasmania, it's right throughout Australia. But what we've got now, we've got a whole lot of new distilleries coming online within the next 2 to 3 years, producing new product. And so the market will get a little crowded. In some ways, that's very much a positive because we aren't limited by too many rules. So we can have pot stills and column stills and sour mash and triple distillation and a whole range of different products we can produce. The problem is that it's all coming at the same time and a lot of the new distilleries do not have a market for their product. So a correction is coming. And the other thing is too, a number of distilleries in Australia have expanded for whatever reason, I won't say why they've done that, and they have the capacity to produce, let's say, 1 million litres. In Scotland, in a distillery produces 1 million litres, 90-odd% of it goes for blending. We don't have a blending industry here yet. So it'll be interesting times. It's I always use a geological analogy. It's like the Cambrian explosion. And all of these different life forms started off and then competing. And then you had Devonian extinction later on. But through evolution, those that are adapted to the conditions, the best will survive. But I fear that that will be a number that won't.
Because you've got these larger players coming on that are going to be able to release products at a much greater volume at a more competitive price point, where does that leave the smaller players that don't have those economies of scale?
It is going to be very difficult for them, and a number of them are already in stress. Australia, a couple of years ago, we produced 400,000 litres of new make in Australia. Last year, I think I was told it was 2 million. And we have a couple of distilleries that have the capacity, one has the capacity to produce 800,000 litres, and another one wants to go up to 1 million litres. Plus, we have a number of other distilleries being constructed to produce even more. So it'll be interesting times. I don't know where the shakeout will come, but I don't know what form it will take.
One of the criticisms of Australian whiskey that you hear from drinkers a lot is that it's too expensive. Yeah. Do you think it's a positive, though, that we've got some larger players coming on that can release more affordable priced whiskies?
I think the price of whiskey will come down, and that is inevitable. But there's always a place for the boutique producer. But like I say, it's still got to shake out. Is that good? Not at this stage. It may have benefits in the long run, but I'm not sure you can predict that at the moment because there are still so many distilleries out there still trying to flog their product. I don't want to see them go under, but some could. I think they will, yes, or people will just walk away.
What about globally speaking? Is there an Australian whiskey style, do you think?
In Scotland and Ireland, they have 400 years of history, whiskey. We got 27. I think we're still finding our style. We do have house styles with Lark and Overeem and Sullivan's Cove. Is there an Australian style? We can do anything. We can make anything. Look at Peter Bignell and his rye whiskies and his malt whiskies and the experimentation he's done. I think that's one of the beauties of Australia is that we are, maybe because we're colonials, we do experiment. We do have, there's a lot of innovation. And I don't think there's an exact Australian style, but the beauty is we can probably make anything we like.
When you set up your barrel store in the early days, yep, what were some of the lessons that you learnt about maturing whiskey in the Australian climate?
In Scotland and Ireland, they have evaporative losses of around 1 to 2% per annum. We have losses of 4, 4.5 to 7. One of the interesting things, and some people have described it as the best conditions for maturing whiskey in the world, is that, you know, particularly in Tasmania, we'll have a 38-degree day. and this occurred two summers ago, then in 72 hours it was 8.5. And so we have these hot winds coming down from mainland Australia, and it gets replaced by a cold front coming in from South Africa. So you have these massive temperature, pressure and humidity changes. So you get greater interaction of the spirit with the wood. So you get a greater intensity of flavour in a shorter period of time than you do in areas of cooler climate. And that's a unique characteristic. So we are still learning about our conditions and what we can produce. And look, we don't have all the answers, you know. We do quite well with malt whiskey, but I've got some rye whiskey from Peter Bignell, and that's a totally different beast. And still learning about what the conditions and how the conditions affect those as well.
What are some of the most recent or upcoming Hartwood releases or TIB releases that people can look out for?
We had two releases a couple of weeks ago, and I think they're all gone. The last release went in a day and a half, and the previous release to that, that was quite funny. I spoke about it on social media because I use social media to tell people what we're doing, and I produced a whiskey that was going to be called Market Correction. I get an email from a guy who said, "Can I have 24 bottles, please?" And I said, "No, you can have two." And people were saying, "Can I have six? Can I have?" And I go, "No, you can." And so we limit the number. So with our last release, the Beagle 6, we limited that to one bottle per person, and that went in a day and a half. Then we have TIB. TIB is structured to be much more commercial, and particularly with all the new distilleries coming online, I think it's going to be much more difficult to sell TIB just because of how crowded the market is becoming. And I think also too, retail spending in Australia is dropping a little bit. So some of the releases prior to the last one have been a little slower than when we started off.
When you talk about people wanting to buy six or 24 bottles, is that, you know, they're clearly looking to sell them on the secondary market?
Yes.
And that's something that a lot of people in the industry are bemoaning at the moment, that, you know, people looking to flip whiskies. Is that something you're concerned about as well?
It's always been a problem. I've seen, as soon as we run out, I've seen prices double or triple and immediately. So that's one of the reasons we limit one or two per person, because quite often too we'd have the same people buying the whiskies all the time, and so we try and get them out there to the broader spectrum of people as possible, and that's why we limit the number. And I even hold some back and put them back on the website later as well, so other people can get them.
All right, Tim, great to chat, and we'll leave it there.
All right, thank you very much.
The Drinks Adventures podcast is produced by me, James Atkinson, with additional production and mixing by Dave Robertson. You can find complete transcripts, links, and other information on the show at drinksadventures.com.au. You can follow me on all social media platforms at By James Atkinson, like my Facebook page, James Atkinson Drinks Adventures, to be kept informed of podcast giveaways and other news about the show. The Drinks Adventures podcast needs your support as listeners. Please do us a favour and leave an honest review and rating for the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. We love hearing your feedback, and it helps inform other people this is a show worth listening to. Or simply drop us a line at hello@drinksadventures.com.au.